The following is a meeting with devotees with His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami, recorded on July 1st, 2001, in Wicklow, Ireland.
Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Sunyavani Pustatadi Satarani. I want to talk about the state of consciousness for a devotee at the time of death, as taught in the Bhagavad Gita and elsewhere. But to introduce ourselves to the topic in a human way, I want to talk about a dear devotee who, in this movement, who passed away in the last week. Most of you won't know her. Her name is Sunita, and she was the wife of Tosan Krishna Prabhu, and they have three sons. After her passing away, Tosan Krishna published on the a abbreviated biography, and some other devotees have shared their memories. So I'd like to draw from some of that material first. I was looking for a picture of her, and I found a picture that's often published with some album of Prabhupada's pictures, sometimes in color, because it's a beautiful moment. He was watching theater in the Brooklyn Temple, not the present Brooklyn Temple, but the one we call the Henry Street Temple. The play was The Kidnapping of Rukmini, and Prabhupada was seated in a rocking chair watching, and as many devotees as possible were squeezed in all around him. It's almost all men inside with their bigger elbows, a few women, and then women standing in the doorways, as many as can stack up to look inside. And some are looking at Prabhupada and some are looking at the players, and they're all laughing and delighted. I wasn't there, but I understand that when Prabhupada saw the play, he liked it very much, and he said, it's better than the story, or better than the book. So you'll see in this picture, because I put pink marking, Tosan Krishna laughing, and Sunita standing in the right in front one of the doorways. So this can make its way around. Take a look and pass it on to someone else. There almost seem to be many Sunitas, because in telling memories of him, you hear about her in so many different aspects. As a devotee, doesn't sound like the same person. She did so many different things, some of them very aggressive. Front lines, book distributor for a long time, and some of it very motherly, cooking, and some of it very Indian, some of it very Western. I didn't have an extensive association with her, but at least I can claim to have among the most early association with her. So let's kind of be guided by Tosan Krishna's report, and he starts it out with a quote, which is a quote that I'll be turning to when we talk generally about this topic. Whatever one remembers at the time of death, that state he will attain without fail. She departed among friends, calling out to Sri Krishna and Srila Prabhupada. Sunita was born in Brajadham, in an Agrawal family in the village of Hutras in 1949. Both her mother and father were born in Mathura. So then he described that they were educated as Vaishnavas. They read Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, etc., all these books. And later her father bought a room for the family within Vrindavan. And then he kind of jumps. Sunita joined the Boston Temple in 1970 and was initiated by Srila Prabhupada in that year. So how did she get to Boston after the Bajadam? Well, when we first saw her, we had our Boston temple in a big old house, and she was married to what we would call a typical karmi. Of course, we had our rather harsh judgments of people. But the fact is, he didn't like her going to the temple, and she loved it. And she said that also within their husband-wife relationship, he beat her. So we had this piece of information. And of course, we wanted to preach and gain new members, and here was such a fresh, new, very young person who everybody loved right away. So I was the temple president, and I remember at least once, she would like come not just for Krishna, but to get away from the husband. So one time she did this, and then sometime after, her husband came looking for her. I said, no, she's not here. And then he was kind of suspicious, looked around. He saw her coat in the coat rack, and then he really gave it to me that you're supposed to be an honest person, and you're just telling a lie. So then we got into a big argument that he said he was actually following the Bhagavad Gita because he was working, and I was just a parasite. And I said, well, we both can be following as a worker and as a devotee in the temple. You have to think of Krishna. So he went on being very dissatisfied. She went on being very much... because the girls, there was like my ex-wife and a bunch of other girls, they were like the art department. And they would stay in one part of the temple and always be painting and talking about Krishna. So she would go there with them and was nourished by them, and they loved her. So after a while, he just gave up on her, much to everybody's relief. And I don't remember the timing of all this, but then Prabhupada came to visit the temple, and this man came, and he wanted a private darshan. So I was there, and he was there, and Prabhupada was there. He didn't bring up anything controversial, as I say. He gave up on her, and he found somebody else. That's how one does these things. Don't just give up on the activity, but you find somebody more cooperative. So he came and he had this talk with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was talking Krishna consciousness, and he was asking some questions in a polite way. I remember one point Prabhupada said in that talk, he said, these boys and girls, they're so faithful and renounced. They love this life of Krishna consciousness. If you said to him, he gestured to me, you leave this Krishna consciousness, I'll give you $1 million. He said, would you do it? And he asked me, would you do it? I said, no, I wouldn't. And then he gave a little donation to Prabhupada, and then he left. And Prabhupada looked at the check, and it was a very insignificant amount. And he said, he mentioned his name, maybe it was Gupta, because Hari Bhakti Vilas says, that's a telltale sign if you're a Gupta. He said, he's a such and such, he said, they're very stingy. So then the Boston Temple had ISKCON Press in it. That's what made it a very lively place. But ISKCON Press decided to leave Boston Temple and go to New York. And since, Sunita got initiated, and so when the press left, she left with them. And I didn't know much about her after that, but I would see her here and there in ISKCON. And around that time, she went out on this heavy-duty book distribution out of the New York Temple and fund collecting. And he says, especially in 1973, she was a major collector in something requested by Prabhupada, where the New York Temple collected not for its own needs, but for a purchase of Juhu Beach temple property, as well as a guest house in Mayapur in the first building born there as well as Giranagari Farm. And he was the Sankirtan leader. So she's quite a small person, but she was and not exposed previously to the United States. So she would go into all these rough areas and just do these things, going door to door, very surrendered and very effective. But when he had to go somewhere else, a reassigned place, she went with him, he says. Sunita was always submissive when her husband needed to relocate. Over India, over the years, we visited India many times. In 1970, he has a particular memory that he likes. I finally remember one of the many times we circumambulated Govardhan Hill, in which we returned late to Radhakund and spent that very hot summer June night resting on an ashram roof. If it was Purnima, and thousands upon thousands of local villagers of all ages majestically circumambulated Govardhan and Radhakund by the light of the full moon. Thus, all night long, we heard them joyously singing the sweet praises of Radha and Krishna. Sounds like a good way for a husband and wife to be together. In 1977, we went to Vrindavan after Gaur Purnima in Mayapur. I was asked to manage the guest house. You all know the guest house. That's a big project to manage it. Sunita, with her total fluency in the local Brij-Bas language, commanded full respect among all the staff and chokidars. The townspeople, some of whom were related to her, could not pull anything over on her. She was in charge, and the workers loved and respected her. Does anybody here have a memory of her? Or knew her? No.
Well, it was in Vrindavan in the Gurukul. Doshan Krishna was the headmaster. And the oldest boy, Gaura Shakti, was in our ashram. And they had a house near Abhiram's house, at the back of the guest house. And she used to make veggie burgers and pizza and stuff for her ashram. Because her boy was in our actual ashram, it was like she kind of paid special attention. So, yeah, she was a nice person, pretty motherly.
Yeah. I meant to begin with her passing away, but anyway, there's not much here, then I'll tell that. Well, that's good. So, Duruka has a fond memory. I don't think anybody who knew her would not have a fond memory. So you can just see her dealing as a woman. Probably not at a disadvantage, but at an advantage over all these Brij-Basi people. And she's bossing them around and noticing that they're trying to cheat her or something as the wife of the guest house manager. Then they decided that they would like to start raising a family. The next year, while I was away for 2 months on GBC service in New York, Sunita chose, while she was pregnant, and against my protests, and he says, do not think I was in charge of Sunita, to travel for 3 weeks by bus with little Gaura, that's their first child, and Sunita's 13 and 14-year-old niece and nephew, with no other adult, all the way to the Himalayan Tirthas of Gangotri, Jamunotri, and Badrinath Ashram. Give me a break, Sunita. You are too much. I returned to Vrindavan, thankfully finding her blissful and no worse for wear. So she appears to do what she wants to do. And he writes at the end, yeah, her last service was to be cooking for 115 children each day in the charter school in Alachua. Sunita's life was successful. I am proud and very happy for her. I wanted to marry her because she was such a good devotee of Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, I can only count my blessings and feel honored that Krishna gave me such a wonderful wife for association. As a family, we have so much to remember. She gave us so much. She will continue to guide us. Krishna is eternal, and things done in connection to Krishna have eternal consequences. As a boat passing through the ocean creates a path or wake in the water, making it easier for other boats to follow close behind, so I pray that I may follow in her wake. the one she has created by her example. I have prayed to her to continue blessing me and our sons with her mercy. She is our auspicious guiding light. So the way she passed away, she had heart problems, and once she even had she had a heart attack and had surgery, and then it appeared that she was all right. The doctors just told her to get exercise. So there's a place devotees like to go to, a river down in Alachua. And so one morning she went there with a few god sisters. And so apparently she had a heart attack in the water. And the abbreviated report is that she cried out, I can't breathe, Krishna, Prabhupada, and she passed away. And here's an article that was written by Pranada, who was her god sister and her friend, and she expands it a little. She says, a Bhaktin Patsy, a trained nurse, was coaching her as Sunita was in extreme respiratory distress. Bhaktin Patsy kept repeating, Sunita, think of Krishna, Sunita, think of Krishna. Sunita then said, Krishna, Prabhupada, then left her body. Sunita had dreaded another heart attack. This is like in the past when she had already had two. When we visited her in the hospital after the second one, she held my hand crying, Pranada, I simply can't go through another attack like this. It is so painful and so difficult to remember Krishna. She confided her fear of failing the test at the time of death, and she also didn't want to live in a reduced manner. She wanted to keep doing active service. Patsy had asked Sunita some weeks earlier that if she had another heart attack, would she want Patsy to do CPR, even though she did not want to live through another attack? Sunita told her, yes, I have three children. So Patsy spent 20 minutes trying to revive Sunita yesterday, but it was not to be. Krishna fulfilled the desire to not live in a reduced manner or live through another attack. You can see we have a responsibility to help each other to remember Krishna. I don't think that diminishes the fact about her departure that a devotee was there and helped her to think of Krishna. So this is taught in brief in the Bhagavad Gita. In the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we get instructions that are more than the wisdom of almost all other religious books, philosophical books, that the soul is within the body and the soul is eternal. And when you die, the soul takes another body, the facts of transmigration. And there are many other things taught. But then in the eighth chapter, in the same quick, matter-of-fact way, we're taught that not only does the soul leave and take another body, but the exact time at which you leave is it's very important what state of mind you're in. So there are two verses in particular, 8:5 and 8:6. Arjuna has asked a number of rather technical questions to Krishna, and Krishna finishes them off by verse 8:4, and then he turns to the really interesting one. And whoever at the end of his life quits his body, remembering me alone, at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. So, in the purport, Prabhupada says that if you're practicing to think of Krishna, then it won't be so important, it won't be so difficult at the end. But you really have to practice. Sometimes ago I was giving lectures on how we shouldn't fall into being just nominal devotees, but we have to practice intensely. Well, this is why. See, if Krishna consciousness is just a hobby in our life, we won't remember it. We'll be more likely to remember the family we're leaving, the money we could have had, and all those different things, instead of quickly remembering Krishna, because our life has been based on the most important thing in our life has been pursuing Krishna consciousness. And then Krishna states what the science is. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. Later in this chapter, Krishna gets quite technical and teaches about two kinds of yogis. One who quits his body in the time of the night, and the other one who quits his body in the time of light. And those who pass in the time of light, they don't come back. So you can be liberated and not have to come back in the cycle of birth and death. And so that has to do with not just so much your consciousness, but the time that you do it, which is not something Prabhupada has taught much to us about. That's like we think of astrology or something, doing things at the right time. But here it is in the Bhagavad Gita, especially for those who practice yoga. There are auspicious times to do things. There are inauspicious things to do things. And you can get entangled if you do things at the wrong time. So then he says that the devotees, however, they don't get bewildered by these things. They always are just practicing Krishna consciousness. And whether it's the time of dark or the time of light, it's more or less the same, because they're Krishna conscious, and they'll pass the test. Oh, that's very assuring. But still, as we read about Sunita, all the devotees were, and many other devotees, you know so many accounts, whether they happen suddenly or with a prolonged illness, we feel very relieved, even if it's our parents who are not devotees. We feel relieved if at the end they can take some Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada writes in a purport how even Krishna consciousness is so effective that even a relative or a grandmother or something of one of our devotees questioned, is Krishna here, as her last words. So if you can give your parents Ganges water or something like that, or chant with them, then you feel you've done your job and that they will benefit. So I'm not saying the science doesn't operate, or that we shouldn't be concerned for it. And the time of death. The time of death is very important. It's compared to examination. But very difficult time also. Imagine if there's an important examination in college for you, and the day you have that examination, you have a terrible headache, or all other distractions are taking place in the room. You think, oh, how am I ever going to concentrate to write this examination? So death, we should be some ideal state, but it's all a distracting state, where Sunita was questioning whether she wanted to even receive that mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Prabhupada had several bouts with severe strokes and heartaches before he passed away. 1967 when he had one in New York. He asked us to pray to Krishna and said, pray that our master has not finished his work. There's a prayer also that Prabhupada used to like to sing about this. I'll sing the tune. It's one stanza from Maharaj Kulashekar. I think he has it on one, or he used to have it on a, when we had long playing records, he put it on there, but you can find it. Krishna Twadiya Pada Pankaja Pancharantam Ajayva me, visatu manasa rajahamsa prana prayana samaye kapavata pitai kantavarodana vidau smaranam kutaste. Roughly. My Lord Krishna, I pray that the swan of my mind may immediately sink down to the stems of your lotus feet of your lordship and be locked in their network. Otherwise, at the time of my final breath, when my throat is choked up with cough, how is it possible to think of you? So let me die now, because I'm in great condition. I'm in having a good kirtan and I'm blissful. My mind is fixed on you. So take me away now. This is what he's praying. There are some passages in Prabhupada's books I've noted as important where he says that if you can't do this difficult job of thinking of Krishna at the end, Krishna may help you to do it. So here's one. It's from the 10th canto, chapter 1, purport to 41. He's saying how the mind is very difficult to control. But from me, Krishna says, comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Instead of allowing one to forget one's real position, Krishna can revive one's original identity at the time of one's death, even though the mind may be flickering. So like that nurse was saying, Sunita, remember Krishna, remember Krishna. So Krishna is coming saying, remember me. You're maybe tossing and turning with some pain or something, and he's coming in, the best friend. He also says that in the 12th chapter, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna comes. What is that expression? We even used to have an illustration in an early edition of Bhagavad Gita where the devotee was in a water, and I think it was the Lord was pulling him out by his sika. You know the verse I'm trying to find? The English? Yeah, that's it. I am the quick deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. So that's sort of the same thing. Instead of allowing one to forget one's real position, Krishna can revive one's original identity at the time of one's death, even though the mind may be flickering. Although the mind may work imperfectly at the time of death, Krishna gives a devotee shelter at his lotus feet. Therefore, when a devotee gives up his body, the mind does not take him to another material body. Krishna takes the devotee to that place where he is engaged in his pastime. There's also an exchange that Prabhupada had with a woman. This was in Los Angeles, and I was present. Her husband had epilepsy, and all of a sudden he would lose his normal bearing, and he would just be gnashing of teeth and throwing himself in a fit, eyes rolling, out of his normal state of being. and sometimes be very destructive. So she asked Prabhupada, well, what about that if in a fit of epilepsy he dies? So Prabhupada said that the last normal state that he was in would be counted as his state at the time of death, not the other state, where technically speaking, he's not thinking of Krishna. And that's the whole point of the end of the 12th, the end of the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Technically speaking, the devotees don't worry whether it's the time of the smoke or the time of the sun, because they're performing their service. So technically speaking, if you're always positively chanting and serving, so if at the end there's something like that, that you're in some terrible accident, you know, a plane crash or some violent crime is committed upon you and you die, it's not that that will be impressed upon your mind, but you'll call out to Krishna, or Krishna will come and save you. So these are instructions I had noted, which are good. And Krishna has throughout our lives been giving us all opportunities that we just have to take advantage of. He gives the scriptures, and here I found a quote about that. It says in the purport to the Bhagavad Gita introduction, in that way it will be possible for us to remember the Supreme Lord at the time of death. That is the only way suggested by the Lord, and it guarantees the result. There is no doubt. That means if you read the books, the Srimad Bhagavatam and these other books, Bhagavad Gita, Mahabharata, this is the way to remember him even at the time of death. I have some more, but rather than just reading texts, so you can stop. Anyone have any questions or comments? Yeah.
I had an experience of that myself, Guru Maharaj, when the time that I collapsed, and there was a lot of anxiety. You're fighting for your very life, you feel. And it's out of control. And my wife, she was saying, just chant. I remember actually chanting in the ambulance, and the whole atmosphere became very peaceful. It was a great help.
Yes. What? Yeah, it's the link. Then you link to Krishna in that way. I remember when Prabhupada came to visit us in Boston, and while he was there, his disciple Pradyumna was in the hospital with a hernia operation. Routine thing. But Prabhupada one day said he wanted to go to the hospital and see him. So he went, and Pradyumna, it already had occurred. And Pradyumna said it was a difficult situation, that he couldn't even chant, but he would chant anything, and he was just thinking of Prabhupada. And he said, is that all right? And Prabhupada said, yes, if you're reduced to, you know, you can't say the whole mantra, you can't think of Krishna, you can just think of this very nice, saintly person, like Prabhupada said about his own spiritual master. Such an unusual subject. It is something that we all have had knowledge of again and again, but we have amnesia of it. or preaching without realization, only because it's become covered over. I remember before I became a devotee, I read this book, the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And it started out, it was written by a Westerner, saying that there, in fact, in the very front of the book, they quoted from the Bhagavad Gita verse, many, many lives both you and I, Arjuna, have had. I remember them, you don't. And then it started out, I think the first paragraph said, there are yogis in India who actually have memories of being born from a previous life. And I thought, wow. It's somehow, the way it was stated, not in a philosophical, not as a philosophical argument, but as a plain fact. And it really impressed me. Readings like that helped me to accept what Prabhupada was saying. So it's a reality that it's not just one time through, but we've lived and died and lived and died, and forget all this. But the purpose of our life now, as human beings, in an animal form, there's not much you can do. But as a human being, you can, at the time of death, think of Krishna and then go to Krishna. So Tosan Krishna is saying his wife is like a guiding light now. He feels she's gone back to Godhead because she said the names of Krishna. I sent him a letter of condolence, and I said it's very auspicious that she said this at the time of her death. And I knew he must be very much grieving. I said, may you take shelter in the holy names and the association of devotees. Because what's he supposed to do now without his wife? But I see from his letter he feels that they'll remember her and be guided by her.
After Krishna had spoken Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, then in the course of the battle of Kurukshetra, then Arjuna's son was killed.
Mm.
And then Arjuna, he was very much lamenting about that.
Yeah.
So,
why was he lamenting?
Yeah, because he's not old enough.
This is covered in a... Giriraj Maharaj published a book of his memoirs, and he has that subject taken up. That somebody challenged Prabhupada with that. And Prabhupada was really feisty. He saw it coming even before the man said it. He knew what the man was going to say. You know this? He's saying something like, well, if Arjuna is supposed to be enlightened, what if he's not really enlightened? And just by the use of one of his words, and Prabhupada started getting argumentative back. Oh, he said the word something like ridiculous. I think it is ridiculous. And then Prabhupada said, why ridiculous? He said, you are ridiculous. And then he got to the core of what the man was going to say, and he said, it's ridiculous that you hear the Bhagavad Gita and within the next 3 days, you're crying. So Prabhupada said something like, I could look it up in that Giriraj book, that maybe he had some temporary bereavement. There's nothing wrong with that when his son died. But then he did act. According to his duty. Well, that was one of the answers he gave. It was just a temporary human response. So at any time, we're human beings, we're not just spiritual beings. Human means combination of conditioned soul and a spirit, perfect. So when a dear one dies, we have this nature that grieves, and it's good to grieve. In Pranada's report, she said there were hardly any dry eyes the next day in the temple and everyone in the whole community was grieving the departure of Sunita. So it's not that we all have a stiff upper lip and say, well, the spirit soul is nothing to grieve about. But you have some cultures, they even have a prescribed number of days of grieving. And then when it's over, then you get right back to supposed to be functioning as usual, but it has to be a period of grieving to respect the phenomena of the death of a person who was with us and who is one of ours. But so we didn't count it that Arjuna didn't learn Krishna's lesson. That was one thing he said. There was another thing he said I can't quite remember. But it was a good to see that that challenge and that reply. Yeah.
I was also wondering about when we present Krishna Consciousness, like when I'm meeting people and presenting Prabhupada's books to them and explaining what they're about, and we get into conversation and be explaining about the changing bodies and how our life is temporary and stuff like that. And so when people are just hit with that, when they're not thinking about these things,
yeah, right.
When they're just hit with it, it's quite shocking sometimes. And it's a bit like, I obviously try and present it in the most palatable way as I can, and sometimes in a humorous way. But still, it's like saying to someone, like people to the doctor, and then they say you've got cancer or something. That don't,
Yeah.
I kind of feel like sometimes, this burden is on me to be presenting this thing, and sometimes it gets a little heavy for me.
I'm not an expert book distribution coach. But it may be best, though, not to try to do heavy preaching with the attitude of, if he just gets this book, the book will do the preaching and everything. I just heard in the classes that Jai Dwaita Maharaj was giving, he was telling of one leading book distributor in India, and he approaches the people, of course it's in India, he says to them, which do you love the most, your mother or your money? And they say, my mother. And he said, take this book, it's for your mother. and then a little later, they say something, it's all right, it's interesting, but it costs too much. He said, no, it's for your mother. So the talk is kind of light and effective, but then if he starts to read it, it's birth and death, and all your material things will be taken away at death. Here's a quote, Prabhupada quote. Krishna says that I am death, and what is the meaning of death? Death means I take everything from him, finished. I take his body, I take his association, I take his country, I take his society, I take his bank balance, and everything is finished. Sarvahara. Sarva means everything. Everyone is trying to accumulate big bank balance and big house, family, motor car, but with death, everything is finished. That is the great distress. Sometimes one cries. You will find at the time of death, in coma, his eye drops are coming out. He is thinking, I made so many things so nicely to live comfortably, and now I am losing everything. And he tells that story about a friend he had in Allahabad who asked the doctor, can't you just give me 4 more years so I can finish my plans? He said he does not know that the doctor can't give him 4 minutes more than his allotted time. But a devotee, he's different. He's thinking in terms of, will I be able to think of Krishna? And we hope at least the devotee doesn't think of I'm going to leave all these material things. A great advantage.
simply because it's so easy to become complacent in our everyday life. I was thinking it's class, but sober, but you know, maybe tomorrow, the next day, I'll just slip back into the same thing of not practicing to remember Krishna, just, yeah, I'm reading, I'm chanting, but how much am I making an endeavor to remember Krishna? And I was like, it makes me feel like I see that complacency or that just saying, you know, and it's like hard to make that shift in.
Well, I read enough material that he said Krishna has given all these literatures just so that we wouldn't, just so that we would have something to go back to God. And he also says, there's a picture over your head of Krishna and Balaram, that Krishna comes in this form. Why? And just so that you'll have a nice form to remember Krishna. So the peacock feather in his head and standing in the curvy threefold way, playing on his flute. So you can think of him in that way. And by remembering him, you can go to him in the spiritual world. So you just have to take advantage of all these things with people. Be with people in your life who are also doing that, not who are in opposition to it. Prabhupada said when he was a householder in Calcutta, he had a place, and right next to it, there was another man, and he would sometimes deal with him and we would have talks. He said, and this man, Prabhupada would say something, and being Prabhupada, he would say something about Bhagavan. And the man would say, why are you always saying Bhagavan? You always say Bhagavan. So you don't want to associate with people like that, who every time you say something about Krishna, they don't want to hear about it. You want to be with devotees where you can name your God, and they'll like to hear about it. I've received several letters to devotees saying how they have enjoyed reading Prabhupada's books, and then when they go to someone else to talk about it, they can't find anybody who wants to hear about it. And they say, well, you should talk with your husband about it, or find somebody who will listen to it. So by reading and by hearing, by practicing it, you won't go into some mundane consciousness. As I said, I have the experience of dying, so do you, but I can't speak out of realization now to you, like, well, this is something I know about, maybe you don't. But from what you hear, it's a time when pretension is torn away, you know, and the things that you really live by, they come forward and you have to deal with them. If you were pretending to be pious, now you have to face who you really are. And then you have to deal with those things, and the last detachments you have to let go, and then the love for Krishna that you don't have, you cry for it. Cry for help, ask forgiveness, all the last things.
Yeah. I have the compassion in it. I have the tendency to hope that the examiner is lenient. You know, because you know, he says an examination is a big examination. And I know that's not a good attitude. I'm like, we'll go ahead and talk about it at that time. But that's definitely my tendency.
Yeah, the examiner is lenient. You're hoping.
Yeah.
Hoping. Yeah, because that's your, or that's our image of God, not, you know, what we're sometimes told is the stern Christian image. Some sects or some exaggerated forms of Christianity is going to throw you into the fire and the brimstone, and or throw you into purgatory or something like that for all the wrongs you did. and I've heard I also have heard some Christians trying to update their theology and saying, if you can think of a God who would do anything, you know, less loving than the most loving person you can think of in the world, then that couldn't be God, something like that. That he must be a loving God. But still, we shouldn't be slack in our trying to live up to our position in Varna and Ashram. Don't be lying and cheating. Like, say you have a relationship with your wife or your spiritual master or your customer or something, and you're always lying and cheating on him, and then when you see them, you're saying, "No, how you doing? Everything all right?" And it's always cheating them behind their back. Then you can't expect leniency from that when it all comes out that, hey, this guy has been cheating everybody. It may be leniency, but there'll have to be some kind of atonement. So that the examiner is lenient, but the cheater has to go through something. Mostly his being contrite. Oh. Or if the cheater manages somehow to touch the holy name or the pure devotee, then he gets forgiven, like Ajamil, a great sinner. And then he was treated with great leniency. So much so that the Yamadutas came for him, and they say, according to all religious codes, we can take this person and take him to hell. And they said, no, you can't, because he chanted Narayan. But the examiner was so lenient. But then he wanted to perfect himself as a sadhu. You want to say anything more about that? About the leniency of the examiner?
No, I think I'll be exposed enough.
you brought it up. How much of a break do you want?
Disproportionate than I think.
Yeah.
No, just one comment on the point. I can understand, because I also think the same. But then sometimes I think that that leniency may come in the fact that if Krishna sees we have other desires, then he wants to see us those desires fulfilled, because we have those desires. So that also could be the leniency that he's, you know, if he says, well, if you have these other desires, then, you know, I can see that you want to have them fulfilled.
Yeah, that's a good point. That fits in with our theology, that then he lets you have those material desires rather than go back to Godhead. Take another twirl in the material world. Yeah. Yeah.
Or is there something special about the time of death?
Yeah, there is something special, and that's why it's cited in the literature. So we just have to accept that. You can understand it more why there is, but Prabhupada has usually said things like examination, so that the teacher will say, you know, when he explains your grade, he said, well, your grade is made up 50% of your contributions in the class, and then another amount for these weekly quizzes, and the final exam counts by just 50% itself. So it's a big chunk of your spiritual credit, and next life is how you actually exit. But In the eighth chapter, as I mentioned, toward the end, we can read that Krishna seems to say that it's not as important for the devotees. If somebody is really doing wrong and has been sinful, and maybe he can, in the end, really make up a lot by a good exit, give up his ways and his bad ways and turn to God. Sometimes great sinners do that. But a devotee, he's like working all along, trying to please Krishna. But he can also make up some more at the end. One of the main ways that this works is that to be a pure devotee means you're doing everything to please Krishna. Anything less than that, you're doing it to please yourself. So where do we wind up at the end? You know, if you look at it like a game board, all these different games they had, if there was a Back to Godhead game, he has to be to go back to Godhead, by the time of death, have no desires of his own. He simply wants to please Krishna. So that's where did you get caught at the end? Maybe at the very end you can make a lot of moves, or you couldn't make any moves. But it's a very important time. Sometimes we don't get any time to deliberate. Sometimes we get to go to Vrindavan. It's hard to say what will happen. But you should. There's a book, Who Dies, that I read by Stephen Levine. He's not a devotee, but he's a Buddhist. And his whole field of professional and spiritual work is to help people die. And a lot of it has to do with meditation and dealing with pain and so on. He then wrote a second book about the last, imagining he was living the last 12 months of his life. And he had one chapter about dying at home. It was called All Practical Things That You Can Do to Help a Person Who's Dying. You see, that's another thing. The person who's dying, and then the other people who are helping him die, there's a great burden on them too. So Sunita's case was so unusual, she was suddenly gone. No one had to take care of her. So I recommended that chapter to Baladev, my disciple, who one after another spent many weeks caring for his mother, and then right after it, his father, as they passed away having cancer at the end of last year. And there was one chapter about all the different things they can do to help people when they're dying at home so they don't have to die in a hospital. And a lot of it is making it spiritually easeful, surrounding them with the spiritual reminders. So in this case, it was two people who weren't so spiritually inclined, but they really got into it in the end, all kinds of things that they had. His father was asking for everything, all the Catholic things and all the Hare Krishna things. And they knew that this is it, I'm going now, and so I want it to be, I want to give up my bad ways. So we think, well, maybe the devotee doesn't have such bad ways. I'm just praying to Krishna. I don't even want to go back to Godhead. All I want is to be your servant life after life. I like this detail that a mere uninitiated devotee who was a nurse was coaching a very beautiful, long-time Brijbasi in what to do at the end. And she took her friend's advice. Remember Krishna. Yeah, she said, I can't breathe. If suddenly you can't breathe, that's uppermost in your mind. So that she said, after having gone through two of those, I don't want to do this again. I don't know if I'll pass the test, and it hurts too much. Okay. Srila Prabhupada, ki jai.
Yeah.